Welcome to In the Cantor's Chair. I'm your host, Cantor Benny Rogoznitsky. Many friends ask me, do I believe that there is a future to cantorial music? So I thought that it makes sense to put together a show that talks about something that is so very dear to my heart and all those who love and support cantorial music. Cantorial music has been tied into prayer from time immemorial, and it deserves our attention to really analyze where we are today with this beautiful genre of music and see what we can do to make sure that cantorial music lives on in our lives, for our children, and for future generations. Hence, today's show, Chazanut, on life support or here for life.
How would you describe cantorial music? Now, I won't lie, before I came here and started working on the show with you, I never even heard of a cantor. It's just not something in my wheelhouse. So not just for people who, you know, come to services for maybe a place without a cantor, for also the general population.
So let's start from the secular world. The best way I could describe it, the best analogy I could make of this music would be to the opera. It is very many people that go to the opera and sit and enjoy it don't necessarily understand all the nuances, but they appreciate that there is beautiful music going on and tremendous vocal ability. Cantorial music is the mastery of the vocal ability to sing in different ranges, to take the words of prayer and dramatize them and bring them to life. So, for example, when we pray and you sing something related to God and the greatness of the world, you might be hitting some very high notes and be adding more emphasis. And then maybe when you're talking about the world and pain and suffering, you might be putting what's called in Yiddish a krechts, a cry. But in the layman's term, cantorial music is taking the words of the tefillah, of the prayer, and bringing them to life with music. There are many ways that a person could perform different parts of the prayer. If you're able to take the words and cause the listener to be inspired, whether the listener is in a concert or they're at home or driving in their car, and especially when they're at services, that I would say is cantorial music at its best.
And not, what about for the non-secular world? For people who are who know what a cantor is, who are in that Jewish culture, what is something that maybe they wouldn't know about cantorial music that they might find interesting to keep it alive?
So to me, what cantorial music does, and certainly good selections of cantorial music, is it makes the prayer less boring. Now, that's not a heretical statement, because the problem with our service, the way it's been structured is, as far as its music is concerned, is that the nusach, the liturgy, repeats itself time and time again. So I'll give you an example. Let's say you're at services on Shabbat, and it's right after Kedusha. The music would go something like this. Yismach Moshe b'matnas chelekoi ki evet nemon kolosoloi. Then you go to the next paragraph. V'shamru v'nei Yisrael esal Shabbos. Then you go to the next paragraph. Retzei v'mnuchoseinu. It's almost like you're repeating yourself 150 times from the time you start the service to the end. What does cantorial music do? It takes the very same nusach, the very same liturgy, and tries the following. It goes, Yisemach Moshe b'matnas chelekoi. And then you move it along. Ki yevet evet emon. So rather than just saying the words over and over, you add dramatization to it. You bring it alive. You go faster. You move the tempo. You move your voice. You add in these vocal runs that, and again, if done in the appropriate places, really takes a passage that may be very, very bland and brings it to life.
I'm going to make a connection, and please just tell me if I'm way off base. So it's like going to a baseball game and you're listening to little freshman year Johnny sing the national anthem, and that is just your regular Jewish prayer. And then you go to the Super Bowl and you hear someone like Pavarotti performing the same song, but with that added flair and nuance that makes his version unique and special. And that is cantorial music. Is that a similar connection to what cantorial music would be?
Yes.
To prayer?
Yes, I think so. I've never really thought about it in those terms. You know, because when I think of cantorial music, I'm always in this tent that is a synagogue and that is majestic and very, very prescribed. Mm-hmm. But yes, that is truly what it is. Take the national anthem, right? As we know, we all know what the national anthem is and what music it emanates from. But it's the ability to hit those notes, to put in different movements as you're praying, or in this case, as you're singing, that makes it exciting for people. And one of the challenges that you have, or that I feel there are in services, is that people who come to prayer, they know exactly what's going to happen. It's not like a concert where you don't necessarily know what the performer is going to do. You know, coming into the Saturday services, that the cantor is going to pray from a prayer book that's prescribed. It never happens that a cantor can suddenly say, okay, today I'm going to add a new song into the service that doesn't exist in the repertoire. What the cantor can do, however, is, yes, they can choose the words from the prayer book, but they can choose a different melody. And they can add a different tempo, and they could give it pathos and feeling. And that's where the cantor can really inspire and bring the congregation in. So perhaps a song that one Shabbat would be sang as a cantorial recitative, the next Shabbat could be sung as communal prayer, where everybody sings together. And that really makes the job of the cantor very, very important and very exciting.
So this is a question I've had for a while. When you're singing a cantorial piece, you can give it some of those liberties with the melodic movements and your rhythms, but are there any pieces that are so set in stone and are traditional that they must be sung the exact way that a previous cantor has performed it?
So that's an interesting question, because, and it could be almost like a controversial topic, because many cantors feel differently about this, especially in today's day and age. But the truth is that there's a mode of prayer. So much of the repertoire that we have, especially for Shabbat and holidays, comes from the minor mode. What I would say in Jewish is crying, is praying to God, is beseeching. It's soulful. And so a cantor cannot take a prayer that is in a certain mode and suddenly change the mode completely. However, a cantor can take a selection, which could be a song and could also be a real cantorial recitative. Let me give you an example. There's the prayer of Ritzeh. Ritzeh is a prayer that we say before Modim, where we thank God for the life that he has given us, for caring for us, and for all the good that he has done for us. So the regular nusach, the regular liturgy, would go something like this on a Shabbat morning. That's general, off-the-shelf nusach. Sometimes on Shabbat, I will sing this selection, which was written by Yossi Green, not a cantor, but one of the most amazing performers, composers rather, and performers in Jewish music. Very popular song that he put to these words. Let's say Yashem Elokeinu Beyam Echoyisedoel Uvisfiyilovosom Uvisfiyilovosom Oyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyoyo cantorial repertoire that would be something like this. So these are three different songs. It's one song. It's one ritzei, one selection, but we are singing it with different styles. So again, you have to keep the general mode of the prayer, but yes, there are options for what you do for many of the selections.
Do you personally have any interest or aspirations in your career to compose for the cantorial genre and add to those greats of the past that you mentioned previously and to change things up? Do you have any interest of making your own ritzei?
So the short answer is no. I don't believe that God has gifted me with the talent to compose. However, I will say that many times while I'm on the bima, and I'm leading services, I will suddenly go into something that I am making up, a piece of music that I'm making up on the spot. And if you'd ask me a half an hour later if I could sing it again, I couldn't. But a certain feeling that I'm overcome with, certainly in the areas that get very monotonous and repetitive in the prayer, like we were speaking before, I will add in my own modes, my own little run that isn't prescribed from somewhere, but that is my own. But as far as formally sitting and composing prayers, I think that there are people that are much more talented in that area than me, and I defer to them, and I'd much rather take their song and try and embellish than make my own.
I'm going to go ahead and make another connection for you. Cantorial music is like performing the to be or not to be speech in Shakespeare's Hamlet. You have the structure and the set in stone script, but depending on the situation, you could take that piece and make it completely your own, allowing for some improvisation in your delivery, or you could do it the exact same way some other actor did it. Both are acceptable.
Yes.
So it can be either super restrictive or very fluid.
I think that's a good analogy. You certainly have room for improvisation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, by the way, that if there's a secret sauce that makes a good cantor, it's that ability that you get up on Shabbat morning and the person knows the prayer you're about to say, certainly the words, but they don't know exactly how you're going to present it. And that's got a lot to do with your mood, with how you're feeling, with what is going on that Shabbat. But yes, the cantor has, I think, tremendous flexibility to put in their own feeling and their own dramatization of the words while respecting the authentic nusach and not creating new liturgy, but rather following the roadmap that has been set for us for hundreds of years.
Why are people navigating away from the genre of music that you are so passionate about? What's happened in the recent years of the cantorial music genre that has led from the stray of its classic appreciation?
So the answer is a lot has happened. But the truth is it's happened not just in the world of cantorial music. It's happened in the world of opera, in the world of entertainment, and it's happened in our lives. And if you think about it, much like watching television and the fact that usually, I think in America, every 7 or 8 minutes, they're coming up with an ad, right? Why? Because people have no patience. And you have to constantly stimulate people. So in a world where, when I grew up, we were sending letters to our grandparents, certainly to our parents in camp. We didn't have cell phones, the idea of text. Today, you text someone, and if you don't respond within 10 minutes, they're like, why are you ignoring me? Now, part of it is, you're not that important. I'm not ignoring you. I got other things to do. But we all know that we're all stuck to our cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
We take them everywhere because, God forbid, we should miss a text or not respond in real time. We feel compelled, this energy, that this pressure, that you have to respond right away. And what that's done is it has forced the world into a much faster mode of living. So I've noticed this on Broadway, by the way. I've noticed that shows have been cut down.
Mm-hmm.
Even shows that were 3.5 hours are now going to 2 hours, 2 hours and 15 minutes. And they may even cut them more. I've noticed in the opera, people have patience, but no longer for the 4-hour operas on every Saturday night. So the world has moved much faster. And even though when you come to services on Shabbat in an Orthodox synagogue, you cannot have your cell phone, you cannot be texting someone or be active in an electronic manner on Shabbat, but the mode of the week has permeated the person. Now the person comes to services, and I like to say they're wound up. Minutes matter. And so if you're going to get up there and try to do what Moshe Koussevitzky did in the 60s at Bethel, which is start services at 8 o'clock and be going until 2, there'll be nobody left. Somebody will hand you the keys and they'll say, you know, when you're done, just lock up, because people don't have the patience. And so you have to be able to deliver and to hit the spot in a much more accelerated manner. And part of that is for the cantor to learn how to move with the times. People don't have the patience to sit in a synagogue for a very long time. They want you to be able to give them the message, maybe not in 7 minutes, but certainly when a cantor begins a cantorial piece that the audience knows is going to take 15 minutes, I think that if you put a monitor on people's fingers and you monitored how they felt, there would be a certain level of anxiety. Some will love it. And by the way, there are still one or two people in every synagogue that would be happy to sit at the services till 2 PM and listen to the great cantor. But I say that today the cantor has to walk into services and say, okay, I'm going to give them a touch of the flavor of what was 50 years ago. But I'm not going to sing four or five cantorial recitatives in Shacharit in the morning service and then another four or five in the afternoon. And what I try to do during a service is I'm not always successful, to say I'm going to sing one short cantorial recitative in Shacharit, one in Musaf, and the rest I will move along in a cantorial style, but without singing heavy cantorial pieces. And now, in concert, perhaps people have more patience, though it's true that cantorial concerts in America certainly have dwindled greatly, and I think much has to do with people's lack of patience. There's a certain anxiety that people feel when a cantor goes up to speak. And by the way, I think they may feel it with a rabbi too. And good rabbis that know what they're doing are taking their message and they're consolidating it. And they're saying it in 10 minutes as opposed to in a 30-minute sermon. But I can tell you from my own experience, anecdotally, when I'm hired to go for events like lead a Shabbat service, whether it's in Lakewood or Baltimore in Israel, very often the person that's brought me over will say to me, Cantor, you decide what the melodies are going to be and what you're going to sing, but I need you to be done by 11 o'clock or by 12 o'clock or right, whatever the time is. And the reason I see this now more than ever is I think people do have an anxiety. And if they see in front of your name that your title is Cantor, they say, okay, Cantor means I'm going to be home late today. Cantor means I'm sitting at services for a long time. So the very long answer to the short question is that this is a societal change. It's not only happened in the synagogue, but we have to know how to adapt to it.
You mean there's no TikTok for cantorial music?
No, but I am thinking, though, about how that could be incorporated. But touching on that, you know, cantors, because of the way we grew up, we listened to all these records that were on the 33s and, you know, the vinyl records, and everything was schlepped out, right? It was all drawn out. And if cantors could go on TikTok, and if they could go on these 2 minutes sort of selections, 3 minutes as opposed to 15 minutes, I think they'd be so much more successful. You know that when you read an article in the Times or in any newspaper today, they tell you 3 minute read.
Yeah.
That's new. Why do I need to know how many minute read? Or when I get a clip on YouTube, I wonder how many more people do this, but I know I do and my friends do. I always go to the end. How long is the clip?
Yeah.
Because if it's 20 minutes, I have anxiety. So we're in the same club and we all feel the same thing. And whether we go on TikTok or not, what you can take away from TikTok is try and do it in short spurts as opposed to a whole long Megillah.
What is the difference between the 60s and 70s and today as far as cantorial music goes? We talked about the attention span of people, but has the genre changed much?
No. So the answer is that the genre has not changed much, but the people have changed. The audience expectation has changed. I view cantorial music at its heyday, which was, let's say, the turn of the century. And I'm talking about the last century, not, we're talking about the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, and then in America, 50s, 60s, 70s. People came to be entertained. Many people did not know how to lead services. Even if they did, maybe they weren't good at it. And so they came to the shul on Shabbat, and that was their moment for deep connection to God, for entertainment, to view the cantor as this larger-than-life figure that could do these amazing vocal tricks and also move them. People want to be inspired. Now, people want that today, but they want it in a short dose. So So have things changed? It's interesting that, you know, the greatest pieces that a cantor sings today are still based on those that were written by Rosenblatt, not so much Koussevitzky because he didn't write so much, but he embellished many pieces. Very rarely are cantors today in 2022, I'm talking now specifically about the Orthodox cantor where I have more knowledge, singing from recent cantorial music. They're singing the old music, and that's great. But what they haven't done is they haven't been able to push it on fast forward. You know how now on WhatsApp you can hear messages in one times one, one and a half speed or 2x speed. They haven't managed to say, okay, in the 60s, I could listen to a piece in 13 minutes. Let me take the cantorial piece and make it shorter. And most of the cantorial pieces can be shortened if the cantor has the seichel, the know-how, how to get around it. And not everything has to be repeated 15 times in order to make the impression. So yes, I think the music, we're still going with the music of yesteryear, but we got to push up the speed a little bit.
So you mean there's not going to be a now that's what I called cantor music from the 60s, 70s, 80s, and today?
I don't think so.
How has cantorial music evolved? And if you were the just king of all cantors, what would you do to make it evolve to where it needs to be right now?
So I would like to embellish that question, if I may.
Go ahead.
And say, how has cantorial music / synagogue music evolved? Right. Because remember, there's the cantorial music that's sung on stage, and that's fine. Somebody wants to hear that for 2 hours, that's great. And, you know, one of the ways it's evolved, and Dr. Mordechai Sobel of blessed memory and Eli Jaffe of the Great Synagogue, great conductors and interpreters of Jewish music, have added to that, because what they did is, instead of cantorial music, which was just with piano, they added these beautiful orchestrations, and suddenly you see the Israeli Philharmonic playing or the New York Philharmonic, and that just brings the whole music to life. It's no longer cantor and pianist, it's cantor, pianist, and cello and violins, and it really dramatizes the entire repertoire. But what I think has happened is that in synagogues, because of this time limitation, because of this idea that people want to move services along, cantors have opened the door to additional genres. So not only cantorial. So now you have, let's say, in the conservative movement, a Debbie Friedman, who was very, very famous for writing these beautiful melodies that were very easy to connect with. The greatest name that I think of is Shlomo Carlebach, as far as coming up with repertoire. Very, very beautiful music, catchy, easy to pick up on. And so many congregations, including the Great Synagogue in Jerusalem, is using some of the Carlebach melodies to move things along, to engage people. Because one of the big challenges with cantorial music, with the exception of Rosenblatt, and I'll explain why in a moment, is that it's not a participatory brand of music. You're the audience, and I'm performing, and that's the show. What Carlebach did is he said, no, I'm giving you the music, but in order for it to be successful, I want you to join in harmonies, in unison, so that the entire congregation is singing. Rosenblatt, there's an exception with him, because in almost every Rosenblatt piece, or in many of them, there's always this melody line that you can harmonize with. There's always this little, either what we call in Yiddish a hapkala, this piece of music. So you have the part that's without rhythm and beseeching God and in the minor mode and crying to God. And then you have a joyous part and a part that people can sing along with. So what's happened is that skillful cantors and community leaders have brought into the synagogue more than just cantorial. And like I said before, where you can sing one or two cantorial pieces, and for the rest of the time you say the liturgy and you bring in music. So this Shabbat, for example, this past Shabbat was President's Day. And I know some people may think that this is like off the beaten track, but I decided to incorporate in the services God Bless America. And in addition, I sang the motif of the national anthem. And yet at the same time, when I got to Shema Yisrael, which is the penultimate prayer in the Kedusha, and I said the words, V'hu yashmi'enu berachamav, which is, God, you will let us know when the Messiah comes, you will gather us in your mercy and bring us back a second time to Israel. I did a lot of soulful prayer there, borrowing from the best of Kusevitsky, David Kusevitsky, Moshe Kusevitsky. So in one service, you had Irving Berlin and you had Kusevitsky. And yet, I tried to, and I hope I was successful, to weave it into one service and yet get out in a reasonable hour. So I think what's evolved is people have come to accept, and not only accept, but to welcome the idea of communal singing, of cantorial music, perhaps taking a little bit of a back step, being there, but not overwhelming, and yet keeping to the tradition and the sanctity of the Nusach.
You mentioned the name Carlebach. How has Carlebach's music impacted the cantorial genre, if at all? And can you give me a little bit of background about him?
So Carlebach has, in my opinion, not only impacted cantorial music, it has completely overtaken the world of Jewish music, and especially synagogue music and repertoire. So Carlebach lived actually on the west side of Manhattan. He had a synagogue on 79th Street. He was a very colorful figure, had a lot of soul, had a really deep connection with his Jewish roots and music, and came up with all these melodies that I was saying before, very, very simple musically to connect to. And what the music does is, it's first and foremost engaging. So when you hear it, you want to participate. A lot of it is you could clap along to, even as a cappella, even without an orchestra or a piano. And so what synagogues have done through what Carlbach contributed to us is, for example, Friday evening, there's a very famous service that today is known as the Carlbach Friday night service. It almost doesn't deal with cantorial music at all. And rather, it's a new repertoire that is somewhat based on the liturgy of Friday night services, but yet is very, very uppity. It gives a lot of joy to people. And if you think about it psychologically, the Friday night service takes us from a regular Friday where everybody's rushing and the week is ending and people are hopeful to be able to relax and get through all their tzuris, all the problems that they had during the week. And now you come to service. So the question is, how are you going to inspire them? Are you going to inspire them by getting up and singing a cantorial repertoire of an hour that's mostly soulful, crying out to God, dramatic, but not necessarily drawing in the community? Or are you going to inspire them by making the audience your choir? And that's what Carlbach does. Carlbach says, I'll give you the melody, and now we're all going to sing together. So, for example, Friday night, there is the famous Mizmor Le David. So he sings, Mizmor Le David, Havulad Hashem Le Elim, Didirayirayirayiradam. And everybody can join in. Even if you just walked into the services and you never heard the melody before, you can pick it up after two or three repetitions. And that has really inspired people. And what I try to do is on a Friday night to take one or two of Carlbach's melodies that I know are hits when it comes to the congregation, and yet come back to cantorial repertoire at different parts of the service.
Do you think it would be worth it for somebody who's interested in being a cantor to actually go off and pursue this career? We're talking about somebody who is 15, 16, and is just entering their thoughts of what I want to do in my life. Do you think cantorial music will still be around for them and be relevant for them enough to make a stable career?
So first of all, it's relevant in as much as it's part of our history. And in my mind's eye, I imagine the Messiah arriving and saying it's time to go to Israel, and always thinking, who's going to be the cantor that's going to sing there, right? Of all the hundreds of thousands of cantors that we have in the world, who's going to be chosen for that role to lead the cantorial service at the temple? But I also believe that cantorial music is going to continue and that it's not dying out. It's just changing. It's evolving. So if a cantor's or a student's choice is to become a cantor full-time and hoping that they're going to make a living out of that solely, I don't know that that's the best idea. I don't know that there is enough need out there for someone to say, okay, this is going to be my life's calling and that's how I'm going to earn my living. Most cantors today lead services and yet have an additional job on the side, whether they're in the world of finance or real estate or in a nursing home business or, CPAs. So you need another career to fall back on. It's not safe enough in today's day and age to only be a cantor. With the exception maybe of one or two or three cantors that I know today, most of my friends and colleagues are doing other things. But if you said to me, and I think to many of my friends, what is your calling? My calling is to be a cantor. I do a lot of other things, right? I help in Park East and I consult on special events and I'm involved in all different organizations. But at its core, what I want to do in life is lead services, and I believe that I'm good at it and I can connect people through music. And so my answer would be, and by the way, this often comes up and people do reach out to me and ask, I say, study cantorial music. Cantorial music lives on, as does the prayers for sure. But make sure that you have a backup plan and that you're not only relying on cantorial music to make a living.
What can cantors do, and cantorial mentors and aspiring cantors do, to keep cantorial music alive and well for today and for the future? What is something that they can do to contribute to this genre of music so it does not die out?
I think cantors have to show some humility. I don't mean that in the pedestrian sense of humility. I mean that they have to look at their calling, but also look at their congregation. One of the hardest things that I find is that when I lead services in other synagogues, You never know what the tempo and temperament is of the people. It's like playing ball in not in home field, right? You're going to you're visiting somewhere. If you pay attention to some of the things that I've said before and you think to yourself, what is my role as a cantor? Am I here to show off? Is this just to show my vocal ability? Or am I here to inspire the people? And understanding that the greatest inspiration of the people is when they can participate. I said this in my previous podcast. The times that I feel most motivated and elevated spiritually is when I lead people into song, but they sing so loud that you can't hear me. Because at the end of the day, while it is about me, it's not really about me. I don't view it being about what I can bring to the table, but rather how my music can unify a congregation. So I think cantors would do well to prepare and to sit back and say, okay, I'm being hired for a congregation. What am I going to do? How am I going to connect with people? And one of the ways that you do better as a cantor is not only what you do on Shabbat, is by calling people during the week and seeing how they're feeling, is by going to people's weddings and happy occasions, and God forbid, sometimes the sadder occasions. Because in order for there to be a relationship, a musical relationship and spiritual relationship with your cantor, you also have to get to know them. And the cantor's responsibility is to really be connected to his community so that when he leads services, he knows who he's praying for, right? We believe that the cantor is the conduit of people's prayer to God. Well, if you're doing that, you have to know your people and you have to know what they're suffering from and what they're joyous about. So again, the long answer to a short question is, I think cantorial music lives on. I don't believe it's on life support. I think it's evolving. And I see a day in 50 years from now where cantorial music will be very popular. But it will be a little different than the days of Koussevitzky and Rosenblatt. Though I would hope that if Rosenblatt walked into a service, he would hear some of the motifs that he had created. And he would be comforted by the fact that 100 years after his passing, there are still people that are singing and rejoicing in the beautiful music that he put together. Thank you for listening to In the Cantor's Chair, with new episodes every other Tuesday. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at In the Cantor's Chair, and on Twitter at The Cantor's Chair for show photos and the latest updates. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe. And as always, pray and pay it forward.